Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, The Rainy Season in Autumn, reading 16 and 17. I'll just read 16 and we'll do 17 together since it has the purport. 16. Parma babuvu sandighas trinaischana hyasanskrita nabhya shyamana shrutayo vijay kalena chahata. During the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, became covered with grass and debris, and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that Brahmins no longer study, and that thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. And text 17. Loka bandushu megeshu.
Loka bandushu megeshu.
Vidyutash chalasauhrida.
Vidyutash chalasauhrida.
Staryam nachakru kaminya.
Staryam nachakru kaminya.
Purusheshu gunish viva. Loka bandushu megeshu.
Loka bandushu megeshu.
Vidyutash chalasauhrida.
Vidyutash chalasauhrida.
Stairyam nachakru kamenya.
Stairyam nachakru kamenya.
Purusheshu gunishviva.
Purusheshu gunishviva.
Loka bandushu megeshu. Vidyutash chalasauhrida. Staryam nachakru kaminya. Purusheshu gunishviva. Ladies. Loka, of all the world, Bandushu, who are the friends? Megeshu, among the clouds, Vidyuta, the lightning, Chalasauhrida, fickle in their friendship, Stairyam, steadiness, Nichakru, did not maintain. Kaminya, lusty women. Purusheshu, among men. Gunishu, who are virtuous. Iva, as. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, move from one group of clouds to another, like lusty women unfaithful even to virtuous men. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, during the rainy season, lightning appears in one group of clouds and then immediately in another group of clouds. This phenomenon is compared to a lusty woman who does not fix her mind on one man. A cloud is compared to a qualified person because it pours rain and gives sustenance to many people. A man who is qualified similarly gives sustenance to many living creatures, such as family members or many workers in business. Unfortunately, his whole life can be disturbed by a wife who divorces him. When the husband is disturbed, the whole family is ruined, the children are dispersed, or the business is closed, and everything is affected. It is therefore recommended that a woman desiring to advance in Krishna consciousness peacefully live with a husband, and the couple not separate under any condition. The husband and wife should control sex indulgence and concentrate their minds on Krishna consciousness so their life may be successful. After all, in the material world, a man requires a woman, and a woman requires a man. When they are combined, they should live peacefully in Krishna consciousness and should not be restless like the lightning flashing from one group of clouds to another. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuni Tanmina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tirubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bebicha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Just to back up a moment to text 16, during the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, became covered with grass and debris and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that Brahmins no longer study and to thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. Actually, Srila Prabhupada gives a short purport in the light of the Bhagavad on this verse. And then when Prabhupada says, a covered road is exactly like a Brahmin who is not accustomed to studying and practicing the reformatory practices of Vedic injunction. He becomes covered with the long grasses of illusion. In that condition, forgetful of his constitutional nature, he forgets his position of eternal servitorship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By being deviated by the seasonal overgrowth of long grasses created by Maya, a person identifies himself with illusory productions of nature and succumbs to illusion, forgetting his spiritual life. So, if we're not reading, hearing the scriptures, and performing devotional service, we get covered by the long grasses of illusion. I think that's pretty obvious, and many of us experience this if we're not really staying really up on our spiritual practices, and particularly not hearing the Vedic literatures. If we're not hearing the books of Srila Prabhupada, we can become covered over very easily and start sort of regaining a material consciousness or material attitude on life. So we want to be very careful about that and not become subject to the long grasses of illusion. Okay, I'll go to text 17 now. Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, move from one group of clouds to another, like lusty women, unfaithful even to virtuous men. The purport to this is also directly from the light of the Bhagavad that's given here. This is from Srila Prabhupada's book, where he, of course, gives purports on these verses from the rainy season in autumn. Very, very nice. In this particular analogy, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes this as a negative analogy because it's sort of describing what not to do. So I've mentioned this before, but we get a little turnover every year or two of new audiences. So for those of you who heard this before, you can, whatever. A negative analogy is a negative understanding of what it's not. In concept learning and education, they talk about this, giving examples and counterexamples. And interestingly, the Bhagavatam, the Vedic literatures, are filled with these. There's actually many, many very good learning principles that are exhibited by the Bhagavatam. And this is something that's often done. We understand what something is by understanding what it is not. Just like in school, if you were going to understand, teach a child what is a square, you might, you know, say it has equal angles and equal sides, but you also would give an example, say, well, it's not this. It's not a rectangle. It's not a parallelogram. These are the things that's not a square, and that helps you to understand it. Of course, one of our very best examples, most famous examples in our literature from the Bhakti Summary to Sindhu 1.1.11, you know, the famous Anyabhilashita Shunya, Jnana Karman Yanavrita, when Rupa Goswami goes to explain what is devotional service, what's the essence of devotional service, he first says what it isn't. He says it's not jnana or karma or anavritam, which means other things like yogic perfections. So we first understand what something is not, then we can also understand what it is. So in this particular analogy that is given to us in the rainy season, we're given the analogy of what we shouldn't do, mainly infidelity. It's explaining that the whole concept of adultery, infidelity, is a very, very disruptive to human society and something to be avoided. Okay. Technical adjustment. Thank you. This verse mentions the idea of a lusty woman. Now, it's interesting because Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur translates in his purport, he says a prostitute. So basically, we're not talking about ordinary women here, and women shouldn't become offended. This is talking about a very low class of woman that probably 300 years ago when Vishwanath was writing purports, it just didn't really exist. The normal grihastha or the normal, you know, normal lady in society would never even, this wouldn't even apply to them. So he's saying, well, someone who's a prostitute might be going from one man to another. And then Prabhupada explains further how this is so disruptive to human society. So this was probably pretty rare a few hundred years ago and not considered to be norm. Unfortunately, today it's much more common. I looked up a few facts and statistics, which I know you always love when I present these things for your edification. Right now, in today's American society, there's a lot of different studies and a lot of different figures, and you come up with, you know, it's not like it's absolutely set, but somewhere between 20 and 40% of all marriages experience adultery or infidelity within them. So that's certainly something that is common and probably increasing. The other thing, of course, is from the Vedic times, we had the example of the lusty woman. I'd say that probably in modern Kali Yuga, especially in the Western world, it should say a lusty man would probably be more appropriate, because the fact is that generally speaking, all the research and studies that are done, men are much more prone towards infidelity than women are, although the women are catching up. You know, that's due to Kali Yuga and increased income, independence, changes in our values, less and less stigma around extramarital relationships. Now we're seeing more and more increase. And so currently, probably about 1 out of 3 men commit adultery, and probably 1 out of 4 women do. So not a very good situation. We see that the what might be a rare moment in our Vedic literature, or what might be called some rare anomaly of a prostitute, now is more or less commonplace. So we see that this is one of the problems of the degradation of our human society, particularly in the Western world, although it's happening more and more everywhere, as we know. So what's the result or the problem of this? Well, the Bhagavad Gita is pretty clear. In the first chapter, verses 40, 41, 42, Arjuna makes a very strong statement about what is the result of this. He says, when irreligion is prominent in the family, the women of the family become polluted from the degradation of womanhood, becomes unwanted progeny. By the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. So very strong statement here, right from the Bhagavad Gita, that when we have this kind of disruption in families where there's not chastity, where there's not faithfulness, where there's not proper adherence to religious values, you have devastation in human society. And the whole fabric of society becomes destroyed. And this is actually a fact. We see this, particularly in our Western countries such as America, where ever since, particularly beginning in the 1970s, we have this increase of divorce rate and more family disruption. to the point where we're now at about 45% of all couples become divorced. Another nice statistic you can all have. The rate is starting to decrease a little bit of divorce because people don't bother to get married anymore. So, you know, naturally, there's not as many divorces because why even bother to get married? So, you know, we see that we have a culture where these traditional values and Vedic values and the values that Varnashram Dharma established are just becoming more and more thrown out, disregarded. And this is really happening fairly rapidly just within the last couple of generations. These things were fairly rare. If you look at statistics for things like infidelity and adultery from even the 60s, 70s was fairly low, and then there was a big increase through the 70s and 80s. And part of the result of this is it's estimated that 17% of all divorces are because of infidelity of one of the partners. So it certainly has the effect that's being mentioned here in our scriptures of destroying the families, and thus the breakdown of the whole culture and society comes about. So it's a source of great unhappiness, a source of great disturbance. And in fact, and Prabhupada expands this a little bit at the end of the purport. He talks about divorce in general and sort of how that should never happen, that there never should be separation. One thing that's often not thought about is the effect upon the children. In our modern society, psychologists tend to want to minimize this. In fact, there was a psychologist who did a long-term longitudinal studies on the effects of divorce on children, where she followed children over 20, 25 years, and she actually gave some very, very strong evidence and research evidence that there were long-lasting effects from divorce. It wasn't just something that what people wanted to think, oh, well, they'll get over it in a couple years, and that's the end of it. But no, there's actually all throughout, they found that into adolescence, there was higher risk of delinquency, higher drug use, and then even into adulthood, more difficulty with forming strong, good adult relationships with partners. There was all a very strong effect from growing up in divorced families. Interestingly, that particular researcher was, you know, a very prominent researcher, was just attacked. I remember this a few years ago when she was just attacked by all these people who wanted to totally disprove and dispute that. They don't want to hear this. You know, even the scientific community kind of turned on her because they said, you know, they don't want to accept this because, you know, 50%, we've all been, you know, so many people become divorced. It's part of our culture. You know, we want to think, oh, there isn't really a problem. You know, it'll all be fine. There aren't any effects from any of our activities. There are no consequences of our actions. We should do whatever we want that makes us happy, makes us fulfilled. You know, and to even suggest that you're hurting other people by your choices and by your actions, I mean, that was like condemned by so many people. But yet the research was there. And now it's become more accepted, and it's quoted now by many people. Now, these things happen. Can the results be somewhat mitigated? Of course. You know, depending upon how things are handled, we can always do things in ways that will cause less difficulty. But we should never be in the illusion that these things have no effect. Religious principles are there for a reason. Krishna gives us, you know, a whole set of religious principles about how we should act while we're in this material world, in these material bodies. And when we violate religious principles, there's going to be reaction. There's going to be some suffering. And unfortunately, I mean, Chris has been talking about the outside society, but the fact is, I think we all know that this has also been prevalent in our own Krishna conscious society. And we have not been immune to these social problems because we are part of this culture. Unfortunately, we still have those anartas and we still have our conditioning from our past lifetime. And even though becoming devotees, we still may succumb to some of these same issues. And in fact, I would have to say that that's been one of our biggest social problems in our Krishna consciousness movement. And we have not really set the kind of example that we should be setting for the rest of the world to follow. So, what do we do? Very simple. Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, Prabhupada makes it so simple. Why can't we just take things so simply? He says, after all, in the material world, a man requires a woman requires a man. When they are combined, they should live peacefully in Krishna consciousness and should not be restless, like the lightning flashing from one group of clouds to another. So this restless mind, even the devotees become disturbed by the restless mind, is thinking there's always something better, right? I'm not satisfied in my situation. If I change my situation, somehow I'll be happy. You know, that will solve the problem. And normally, I've, of course, been doing marriage counseling for many, many years with devotees, and I can tell you that most people, whatever problems they're having in the relationship, they simply take those problems to the next relationship. You know, if we don't work on solving the problems that we have, we simply continue those and we bring those problems to the next partner and inflict them upon them. So I'm sorry if I'm sounding a little bit harsh, but, you know, it is a reality, and we do need to very, very carefully listen to these instructions of our scriptures and of our spiritual master, because if we don't, so many problems and consequences ensue. So we need to do more than espouse a philosophy. We have this wonderful philosophy of how we can become happy, even in this material world, that we can, you know, we can live peacefully, as Prabhupada says, and at the same time make progressive spiritual advancement. And but we have to live by these principles, and we have to not only live by these principles ourselves, but we should be exemplars of these principles that we show to the rest of the world. Prabhupada wanted to establish a culture, a society, first of Brahmins, then of course, you know, developing, you know, Varnashram, but primarily the Brahmins needed to be there, because Brahmins are the teachers of the rest of society. So, and above a Brahmin is, of course, is Vaishnav. So the devotees, the Krishna conscious devotees, are meant to set example for the rest of the world. We are meant to set the example of how to live a God-conscious life, a peaceful life of simple living and high thinking, of how to make spiritual advancement even while in this very, very difficult material world. And it is difficult sometimes, because we have this balance that we have to attain. On one hand, we are saying, don't separate, stay together. In other words, sort of keep this attachment very strong. At the same time, many things in our scripture are telling us to become detached. So, in other words, be very, very strong and resolute one's duty, but at the same time, not be overly attached. Now, that can be kind of a difficult thing to do. It's a difficult balance, but it can be done. So we don't want to become excessively attached to family life, or we think that's all in all, that that's the whole purpose, to simply have a nice family life. But at the same time, we have to do our duty and perform our particular specific responsibilities in whatever particular ashram we're in. But we do have to remember ultimately that the Vaishnav is beyond any designation of Varna and ashram. The Varna and ashram do not define who we are. What defines us is being eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being a Vaishnav, being a devotee of the Lord, a servant of our spiritual master, that's our definition. That's our constitutional position, our Sanatana Dharma. While we're in this material world, we have temporary Dharma. We have things that we have to do that are our obligations and our duties, and they must be performed. But they should all be performed in relationship to Krishna. And that's really the answer. We simply do everything as service to the Lord, then it really causes no problem for us. As far as household life, no impediment to Krishna consciousness. I can't remember and have to go through them in my head, but I remember once I was counting, and of our 12 Mahajans, our great exemplars and speakers of Krishna conscious philosophy, 7 of them were householders. And we see that in our Panchatattva, we have Srivasacharya, Dvaitacharya. We have so many exemplars. What to speak of in modern times, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and our own Srila Prabhupada, who were in household life for many years. And even while they were in household life, did tremendous preaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a householder up until how many, the last few years of his life he took sannyas? What, about 4 years? Yeah, just at the very, very end of his life he took sannyas, you know. And just those, and but all through his life, the tremendous work that he did, the preaching, the writing books, translating, establishing, you know, Krishna conscious sanghas, and just everything that he did as a householder. For many of those years, he was working a job. He was a judge or magistrate, all these things. And none of this, of course, we're talking about, you know, the extreme example, you know, of the highest level of devotee, of great pure devotees, you know, Mahajans themselves, when we talk about Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But nevertheless, they set that example for us. So the bar is pretty high when we look at the acharyas in our line, but we can see these as exemplars, at least that we follow in their footsteps, if not imitate. So a devotee needs to be firm in his purpose of spiritual advancement, whatever situation, whatever ashram we're in. The devotee finds that any Krishna conscious situation becomes favorable because Krishna puts us in a situation to learn from that situation, to make advancement in wherever that situation is. So we don't need to hanker to be in a different situation or a different ashram or different whatever it may be, but simply find what is it in this situation I'm in, Krishna has placed me, for what reason, and to be able to serve in that capacity. There's a nice purport about grihastha life and the difference between materialistic household life and grihastha life. This is in many places Prabhupada talks about this, but one I like is from the Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1. Srila Prabhupada says, the grihamedi should be regarded as a blind man driven by uncontrolled senses about to fall into a ditch. Of course, that's the famous verse of Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, right? It says, the opposite of the grihamedi, however, is the grihastha. The grihastha ashram, or the shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order. Regardless of whether one is a householder or a renunciate, the important point is that of relevant inquiries. The grihamedi, however, is simply interested in the animal necessities of life. The grihamedi's life is full of calamities, whereas the life of the grihastha is full of happiness. And I know all of you grihasthas out there have experienced, you've had nothing but happiness in your life, right? Well, it is actually, because we have the greatest happiness. We know what we're about. We know the meaning of life. We have our connection, our relationship with Krishna. And therefore, we are spiritually happy, even though there may be some material difficulties along the way. So I think that one of the essences of grihastha life that makes it happy, that makes it fulfilling, is that we have to really connect to what is the purpose of grihastha life, the spiritual purpose. Grihastha life is meant for giving to others. We de-emphasize sense gratification and just personal interest by being more broad-minded, by thinking outwardly of how can we help others, not just materially, but of course spiritually. First of all, the grihasthas are the only ashram that generates income. Of the four ashrams, only in grihastha life is there productive work. At least, supposedly, some householders generate income, I hear. But, but at least that, everyone's saying, who? But at least that idea is there conceptually. And if one does provide income, he's able to support the other ashrams. And obviously, more specifically in our example, they'd be able to support our temples, our preaching movement, our basic Krishna conscious projects. So that's why we are always, Mother Mukha is always up here telling everyone that they should donate and tithe and give back to the temple. But absolutely, it's not just that, yes, the temple needs support, but it's our spiritual duty. It's actually our spiritual responsibility as grihasthas to give back, to support Krishna consciousness, to support this movement, to support our deities and our temple. I mean, this isn't optional. This is our duty. One must do these things. And it's interesting because you probably all have heard that story when a new householder came to Srila Prabhupada and said, well, what's the duty of a householder? And Srila Prabhupada gave the story about how you cook prasadam and you go out and you say, if anyone is hungry, come and eat. And you ask three times if anyone's hungry. And probably, it was kind of a strange, a little bewildering. But he asked again, well, but what do I need to specifically do as a householder? And probably gave him the same answer, how you go out and open your door and invite anyone who wants prasadam to come. And I don't know that Prabhupada meant that literally, that that's what we need to do every day, but he was making a very strong point. And that point is that it's the duty of the householder to give to others. In this case, to offer prasadam to anybody who needs it, hopefully to qualified people, Brahmins, Vaishnavas, etc. But that's the idea, not to be miserly, but to be open-hearted and broad-minded and to give to others as needed. Householders can also personally preach. In fact, in the early days of the movement, we all experienced this. In fact, Sometimes newer, younger people are a little surprised. In the beginning, there was almost no difference whether you were a brahmacharya householder, right? I mean, you kind of lived not much differently, you know, very limited housing. I mean, I know for years I went out 6 days a week on book distribution, Sankirtan. We all basically did the same thing, did the whole morning in programs, and actually it was very nice. it was a very wonderful life. Now, is it practical in the long run that everyone in household life can, you know, live within an ashram situation or a temple situation? No, probably not. And of course, it was needed as the beginnings of the movement because we had a very, very small army to try to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So everybody had to be on the front lines. Now, of course, it's a little different where more of us are more on the back lines. But still, that idea, and Prabhupada was sent his household couples out to start temples. We all know so many famous stories, such as London, where the, you know, householder couples went and began Krishna consciousness in places all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada was so happy and so pleased with his householder disciples because they helped take up this preaching work. So we may not be able to do that in our particular stage, but we all can do something. We all can do something to help this Krishna conscious movement, whether it's just to support financially or to go out ourselves or take opportunities for preaching wherever we can. And there's many different opportunities that we have. And really take up this legacy of our acharyas and the Vaishnav compassion to go out to the fallen conditioned souls and spread Krishna consciousness. This isn't limited by only certain people can do it or have to be a sannyasi or a brahmacharya, but everybody can take this mission up. There's so many wonderful examples, and of course the example of Kurma Brahman being one of our prominent examples, where when Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, and this Brahman Kurma became just so ecstatic and attached to Lord Chaitanya. He was a householder, and he said he just wanted to leave his family and go with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya actually chastised him. He said, "No, you stay here in your household life. You stay in your village, but you preach Krishna consciousness to everyone and become guru to to everyone." So Prabhupada gave the householder the specific instruction to stay in his home, in his work, whatever he did, but to preach and actually become spiritual master to everyone that he could influence in his surrounding area. So again, no real impediment except our own impediments in our mind to helping to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. And as we get a little bit older, we have to be thinking about how we can minimize some of those material responsibilities and how we can give back more and more to Krishna consciousness, give back more to Srila Prabhupada, give back more to spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. Now, ideally, this topic came up some time ago when some of our sannyasis were visiting about, you know, what should one do at the end of life. And of course, there's two different injunctions. One injunction is that everyone should take sannyas in the life, and the other injunction is in Kali Yuga, no one should take sannyas. So both are there. But the point is that one should try to minimize one's material affairs as one gets older, and to take up Krishna consciousness more and more. And so I think that we don't have too many good examples of people going all the way through household life very successfully and then taking sannyas in late life. We may get more of these in the future, but we haven't seen this so much. But at least we can all, both men and women, be in the mood of sort of the vanaprastha mentality. That one minimizes, you know, not like it's an absolute set ashram that we have so many rules for. This isn't really that established. But at least the mentality can be there. It tries to minimize one's material activities, one's sense desires, and emphasize more and more one's own Krishna consciousness and giving Krishna consciousness to others. So in this way, we can be in grihastha life, make spiritual advancement, and as Srila Prabhupada says, be happy. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any comments, questions? Take the women's side first over here.
Where can we find more information on the...
Where can we find more information on the ashram family life and how exactly to go about living that way?
That's a great question. One resource, I've been involved with a group called the Grihastha Vision Team for a number of years, And there's a lot of resources. Actually, we're just going to be printing a book on Grihastha Life. It'll be coming out soon. We also have a website, and there's a, which I don't know if I have. I think it's VaishnavFamilyResources.com. That's one website on some resources that are there on different aspects of Grihastha Life. We occasionally give courses and seminars, things like that. Hopefully more of those will be coming up. And of course, you can always search through the scriptures. There's many, many places on that talk about the principles, the religious principles, Grihastha Life in our scriptures. Of course, one of the difficulties is conditions were a little different 5,000 years ago when the Bhagavatam was written, and some of the prescriptions might seem quite difficult for us, to really follow, because it was a different time when people were very spiritually elevated and they're very advanced, and we're not so much now in Kali Yuga. I could give you some more ideas, or write to me, or we could talk more about that, some more resources. I could send some things. Padan Mahanpur?
I was thinking of the verse of Doshwara. It says, in the beginning, there's a desire for self-realization. So that desire seems to be the preliminary basis, and then if your other partner also has that desire for self-realization, then the household life is not exactly minimized, but it's not the primary focus.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore those things that go on, because being trying to be trained in the transcendental perspective, we understand we can't adjust too many things. We more or less tolerate it, try to come to the mode of goodness and perceive the different ways that this material energy works without being affected by it. And in that way, staying in duty to continue our process of devotional service. And Prabhupada would give sometimes the example of that one lady, they would go and ask, where's your husband? And she would say, oh, he's on a trip, but he had left long, long ago, but she's always maintaining within her own chastity that she's doing this service to her husband as a service, as a sacrifice to Viva Hajaga. So it's so hard to understand it in the mode of passion and ignorance. But in the mode of goodness, it makes so much sense how to do it. And nowadays, goodness is like a myth or something.
Well, I think there's two, at least two, that I can think of just from what you said, two models of how Grihastha Life can be successful in spiritual advancement. And one, I think, is kind of what you're saying, is more or less a more detached frame of mind in the mode of goodness, where the husband and wife are both pursuing Krishna consciousness, they understand each other's service and try to be supportive, and there may or may not be so much relationship or so much attachment, or it may or may not be a wonderful relationship, but one does one's duty and one continues. I think that works. And then, but there is another model, and that model is more of a partnership, I think, where husband and wife may also feel very committed to Krishna consciousness and more or less share in a mission of how they're going to spread Krishna consciousness together. And that can be very powerful, too. That doesn't always happen, but I think that's something that householders, especially younger householders, should think about what is their joint purpose. They may have their individual purposes, their individual aspirations in Krishna consciousness, but also in household life, think about what is it that is our shared goals and our shared mission, and how we can work together, support one another in spreading Krishna consciousness. Right. Anything else? Yamaraj Brahma?
Thank you, Tamahara, for such an informative class. You touched on practically every question that I had in my mind about this particular verse. So I couldn't pick the better person to give this class.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Krishna. Yeah. I mean, all we can do is try to follow in footsteps of the enlightened and enlivening purports of Srila Prabhupada that basically he explains it all so simply. It takes me half an hour to say what Prabhupada said in two sentences. Anything else? Oh, back here on the lady's side.
Thank you. One of the main things that I noticed when you mix spirituality with grihastha life and the detachment and all this is this harsh, like a shield that either man or woman develop, and it's not like a loving community. How I say this? Let's see, like the way you express yourself and talk to each other is very harsh. It's dry, and I don't know how much does that affect the detachment with the sex life, which is understandable when you study mm-hmm. the scriptures and say, okay, gradually you're going to start detachment and all that is important. But it gets confused with the loving relationship, with the holding, with the loving, with it's intimacy too, but mainly reflects also into the world, into the community. So you see many people, many, many, many people that they're harsh, they're dry, they're like, and it's because it's not a loving relationship because of the fear. If I'm loving with my wife or if I'm loving with my husband, maybe I fall into lust. And yes. So the loving is not present. I feel that it's a lot of, I guess I said it many times, harsh and dryness, and it's not loving relationships in the community. But
that's an excellent point, and I hear what you're saying. That's a long, long discussion. I don't know how to, but it is a fact that sometimes because our lack of spiritual advancement, because you know we still are very prone to the modes of nature, and our own material attachments and material desires. That sometimes in the attempt to sort of subdue those material desires, you know, a person may become overly harsh. And in fact, this is this is warned about by Rupa Goswami when he talks about in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu about the principle of Yukta Vairagya. He says that if one resorts to only renunciation, or Vairagya, he said the heart becomes hard. And that's considered to be a great fault in Vaishnavism, because Vaishnavas don't have hard hearts. I mean, advanced Vaishnavas, we may, but advanced Vaishnavas have soft hearts. They're loving. They're full of warm, loving feelings and relationship and spiritual love, which is the deepest, the warmest type of love. But because, you know, not being so advanced, we may, you know, take on that sort of a more harsh or austere quality. Now, what Rupa Goswami says is the principle of Yukta Vairagya counteracts that. In other words, seeing everything in relationship with Krishna, using everything in Krishna's service. So rather than a harsh attitude of my wife is an interference or my husband is an interference with my devotional service, we need to see how is my wife, how is my husband, you know, helping me in devotional service? How, and even better, how am I helping them? Because the service attitude is really what's needed. Husband should be serving wife, wife should be serving husband. If the service attitude is there of how do I help them to advance the Krishna consciousness, how do we help each other? And again, it's again like I was saying, the idea of sort of getting beyond oneself, you know, if there's the emphasis on the greater good, on something beyond ourselves, you're talking about the community, well, work to help the community, to support the community. How can we do more for Krishna consciousness? Then that harshness kind of dissipates. And one establishes a real relationship. Real relationship is spiritual. You know, in the ultimate sense, we want spiritual relationship. And spiritual relationships are nurtured through association, but association in service. And if there is an association of service, then the association will be either one of, as you were saying, it just becomes sex life or, you know, sense indulgence, or just becomes aloofness and, artificial detachment. You know, so that's why there has to be service together between husband and wife. There has to be a spiritual relationship, a spiritual connection, or it'll fall into either just complete materialism and sense desire, or separation, detachment, harshness. So somehow we've got to, you know, overcome that and bridge that. And it all can be done through our focus on Krishna and devotional service. Right. I think she's probably in here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.